If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
There's a lot of disquiet and anger within the labor movement and among rank-and-file workers, our guest says. He writes, before the pandemic, workers had fallen into a kind of malaise, a political environment that since the early 1980s has been tepid, if not outright, hostile to workers. It seemed to create a new normal of low pay and bad jobs. And then the COVID-19 pandemic hit, and workers experienced extremely difficult working conditions. And then the economy opened up in a wholly unprecedented way. There was all this pent-up consumer demand, and employers were just desperately looking for workers, and workers, all of a sudden, had newfound leverage. So, it's safe to say, we're now at an inflection point for labor in the United States. All of that, according to Dr. Robert Bruno, a professor and director of the Labor Education Program at the University of Illinois. I think that's about as succinct and sounds about as right is what we're going through as anything I've read, Doctor. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for the kind words, John.
Well, so if that inflection point is now, what is that point? What is happening now?
Yeah, so if we think about the American economy going through periods of significant transformation. So we go from an agricultural society to an industrial society. We introduce the assembly plant and division of labor in the 1920s. And now we're moving out of a sector in which we're relying on fossil fuels and moving towards electric vehicles. It's another major industrial shift, and therefore all the rules are up for grabs. How that work's going to be done, how much of that work is going to be done, who's going to do it, what is the rate of pay going to be, the quality of those jobs, how are the firms going to be profitable. There's enormous uncertainty. And so you're at an important point. Depending on the decisions that are made in this particular negotiations, but also there's some similarity with the writer's strike, and this is going to show up in other sectors. The path forward in this electric vehicle, this renewable energy fueled industrialization, these rules are going to be set into place, and they're going to be set into place for a generation. There's not going to be any turning around. And so if you get it wrong, well, there could be great imbalance of power, and workers could be at disadvantages for decades, or employers won't be competitive. But if you get it right, then there's a lot of money to be made, and there can be a more prosperous path, ladder, into the middle class. Mm-hmm. So all of that is what's establishing this inflection point, this moment of decision. And I think it makes it hard in settings like this to actually get an agreement.
Getting it right, meaning getting the employees the maximum amount of money they can make without hurting the company's chance to be profitable and move forward in a whole new kind of technology, right? That's the inflection point.
Yeah, I mean, that's putting it very, directly and materially. There is there's a price point that has to be found.
Well, let's cut to the chase. What should that be? Are the employees right in demanding more pay or refunding pension plans, that sort of thing?
Well, they're absolutely right. I think they do have the high ground, and I think public opinion does align with UAW workers. It's been really decades controlling for inflation, in which workers really have just just pedaled really hard upstream to try to stay above their economic needs. They really haven't seen strong economic growth, while enormous profits have been made at the company level, and CEOs have taken disproportionate, yeah, and astronomical shares of of that wealth. So, you know, we're now in a period of time where these are companies that can certainly afford to pay these workers more. And it is important to move back towards some kind of defined pension plans that provide income security for workers in retirement. These are not long careers. These are hard careers. And that employer-provided insurance, that's one of the stools, you know, along with good health care and good wages, that really did build the middle class post-World War II. And so I think the UAW certainly is in the right to demand that the big three follow through on these.
You mentioned the fact that the executives are making big profits and the employees haven't been keeping up, say, commensurate with that. But this idea that the CEO got a 40% increase, therefore everybody in the company should get a 40% increase, that math doesn't make any sense, right? I mean, there's only so many executives and there are hundreds of thousands of employees. So the math just wouldn't tolerate that sort of an increase, would it?
Well, let's keep in mind, I mean, those 40% increases for the CEOs are on top of multi-million annual salaries and stock bonuses. 40% on someone at a two-tier wage is, of course, far less actual dollars. But to your point, in terms of the total number of people, often you'll hear the CEOs at the big three say, well, you know, we don't want to be uncompetitive. We don't want to price ourselves out of the market. And they're implying that their biggest cost, that the biggest cost per car, when you break the dollar amount down, is the actual labor cost. Well, when in fact, the labor costs represent a minority of the total cost. And if you were to, you know, if you were to properly account for all CEO executive pay, executive bonuses, the value of their health insurance, the right. value of their retirement income, I think you can make a strong case that the biggest cost to the product really isn't coming from the workforce. Keep in mind, they're building the car, right? They're putting the product out there. But in fact, it's coming from the C-suite. I mean, it's coming from that executive class. So at the very least, there should be some way to provide comparable pay and benefits, particularly when you're reporting very, very high profits. And if you control for inflation and you realize that the auto workers really haven't seen significant pay increases in decades, the 40% really just represent a kind of rebalancing. And again, you control yeah. inflation and such. It's a rebalancing.
Well, I don't think we've thought.
They really haven't. They've actually lost money.
Well, we haven't thought about it in those terms, I think, for a long time, either because we haven't thought about it or maybe you're right because they haven't been keeping up economically. And to be honest with you, I'll pause here, Doctor. We'll come back with you in a minute. Dr. Robert Bruno is a professor and director of labor education at the University of Illinois. I would have guessed that the public sentiment is not so much on the side of the UAW. To be honest with you, I'm not sure we know or have much of a feeling for the C-suite either. But the consensus, I would judge, is that if you are at a General Motors assembly plant, you are making good coin. Maybe that's not true, or maybe you're not making as much as you should be. By the way, I said to our guest a moment ago, we're visiting with Dr. Robert Bruno from the University of Illinois. He's a labor expert, that I think that the audience might be split. I don't know that there's all that much sympathy for the union workers in this automaker strike. But in fact, Pete just handed me a note here that said, according to Gallup and Morning Consult, 75% say they're with the union, just 19% line up with the corporations. So, Mr. Bruno, I got to take that back. 75% feel like not only do they have leverage, but they have the sympathy out there as well.
Yeah, that's right. And the last 2 years, national polling has shown almost 60-year highs of public approval for organized labor. And, you know, I do think the growing income inequality that really does harken back to the late 1970s period. And then a lot of the chaos and difficulty of working during the pandemic has really, I think, raised the consciousness level of the American public that there is a role for collective bargaining, and there's a role for worker collective voice, and there's a need to rebalance power. In fact, some of the more interesting polling indicates that not only are the public supportive and on the side of union workers, but they actually believe that unions are going to get more powerful and that they should, that it would be good for America.
But if the cars become too expensive, then people won't buy them and nobody wins. So I wonder how much would the marketplace tolerate in an increase in worker pay? You just a moment ago said that the executives, in fact, account for more of the cost of the car than the people on the shop floor building it, which is surprising to me. But if that's true, fair enough. I'm just wondering how much more pay to the employees would the market tolerate before they say, skip it, I'm not going to buy a car.
Well, that's a good question. Trying to predict what that is. Let me note, just to put a finer point on it, that analysts have found, and this will I think shock most listeners, but the labor cost of auto manufacturing is only 5%. Of the annual cost. 5%, John.
I'm surprised. I would have guessed 40%. I would have guessed a lot more than that.
Sure you would, and that is true. I think most people do come to that conclusion, but it's single digits. It's 5%. So even if that labor cost were to go up by some various estimates, and perhaps that raises up a bit, it isn't going to be the factor that forces the car, if you will, or forces the product to become uncompetitive, and as a result, people will turn, let's say, to Tesla or one of the foreign manufacturers. I mean, at some point, there is a price point that the market will bear. But keep in mind, if the entire industry, as it appears to be doing, is going to convert, they're all going to convert at roughly the same speed to cars that are propelled by batteries, and they're going to make this move towards electric vehicles, then to a great extent, they're all going to be kind of producing this.
They'll be in the same boat.
Product.
Yeah.
That's right. And very near the same price point. And if the consumers have a hunger for electric vehicles, and it appears as if that hunger is growing greater and greater, then there's no reason to think that raising these labor costs by some relatively small percentage overall are going to make the cars uncompetitive.
That is really interesting and surprising. I'm so glad we took this time. I'm going to call you again, Dr. Robert Bruno, Professor, Director, Labor Education Program at the University of Illinois. Mr. Bruno, thank you again. We'll visit another day. I'm sure this strike probably is going to be in place tomorrow, and the next day we'll catch you. We'll catch up again another day.
Thank you, John. Look forward to it.
Yeah, me too.